And welcome back. This is WGXC's afternoon show. We've just stepped into our second hour, and I'm here with Danny Scher. Hey, Danny.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, it's going great. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so seems like you are from St. Louis. You're a Catskill resident, but you came to us from New York. That sounds like a man divided.
Lots of locations involved. Pretty confusing. St. Louis is my hometown. But I knew pretty early on that I wanted to study music. And because I was sort of in the jazz vein at the time, New York seemed like the only place to go, pretty much. Straight out of high school, moved to the city and attended the jazz program at New School University. I was there from 01 to 05. Did a brief 2 years back in St. Louis. Not the easiest place to start making a living as a musician who's in his early 20s. Took a brief break, came back in 08.
That's quite a time to return to New York. That's about when I was leaving.
Yeah. I was there early 2000s until the past year. So I've seen it change a lot. And, it's an amazing place, and there's an amazing music scene, art scene, all that, but it's getting a little pricey, and people are actively searching for, places that they can live on a realistic artist budget.
Thus, here you are in Catskill.
Exactly. And I mean, I love it here, so, I'm not saying it's sort of a default thing to move out of the city, and I mean, I wanted to move, to a rural spot. We talked about it, and we're just not burbs people, my wife and I. So
yeah,
this is kind of what we wanted, is the polar opposite of the city while still being able to access the city when we want. So
sure. So how has it impacted your musical endeavors being up here?
Scheduling's tricky. That's the main thing. But other than that, I mean, just the travel and the scheduling is tricky, but for whatever reason, I'm involved in as many projects as I've ever been in the city now that I moved out of the city. these are all projects too that I'm choosing to be a part of, that I really believe in, that, I want to see through. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for me, because I'll go to the city, have a great time, play some fun music, and then, I might have a long drive ahead of me, but then I pull up and I can actually park in front of my house, and I have stars to look at and mountains, and I love it.
Truly, that sounds like you have finally mastered the equation of being a working musician.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
Feels like I'm closer than I have been in the past. So
how many bands are you currently playing in?
This took me a while to, I was like thinking about this earlier, like what it really is it, but as far as active bands, I would say about four or five. Four of those are based in the city. One of those is based in Catskill Hudson area.
Four or five. That's quite a lot to take on.
It's fun. It is. It's kind of like it's hard to decide, what the priority is if one project takes off beyond the others. I mean, certainly Horse Torso, that's the project that I write music for and play drums in. That's sort of my baby.
So that's the most demanding on your time.
Definitely. I mean, I take the most active role in that project. Mm-hmm. A lot of these other bands, I write music with them, I play drums with them. I wasn't a founding member. There's just certain, duties that I take on for Horse Torso that I might not necessarily take on for all the others, although I do everything I can to help the other projects succeed and, make it a democratic thing.
Sure. So how does touring fit into your, tentacled octopus of musical endeavors here?
I think for a lot of musicians, because obviously it's very hard to make a living playing music, even when you go through spurts of, you know, being very busy or having some sort of cool gig or tour, you know, then that disappears and then you're back to where you were. So, teaching drum lessons has been something that I've not only enjoyed for a long time, but it has sort of been a perfect occupation for someone who also needs to take off here and there and do other musical things. And generally, you know, students, whether they're private or at a school, tend to be understanding of the fact that as a working musician, you might need to take a week here or there. Whereas, you know, working at a hotel in Midtown, like I did in 2009, they're a little less understanding when you're like, hey, I'm going to California for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure it's probably pretty cool for your students to be able to say, oh yeah, well, I, you know, no lessons this week. My teacher's on tour.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully that's a thing. and it's, you know, it also helps me when some of these bands, you know, get press or any kind of accolades, that reflects well on me. And it's, you know, a way to, you know, present myself to a potential student, like, okay, you know, here's how you can tell that I kind of sort of know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that, when you're on tour with one band that, the other three or four that you play in suffer while you're missing, or is that not an issue?
So far it hasn't been an issue. That's mostly because a lot of these bands are in the, either in the beginning stages or in the sort of revamping stages. Horse Torso has only been around for a year. We just put out our first album in October. And Next Great American Novelist, another band I'm in, I'm the second drummer, but they sort of revamped in that time. And so we just recorded, and, you know, next year is probably when, I guess I can actually just say that next year could present some issues, because all these bands either just put out albums or they're going to put out their album sometime early next year.
Gotcha.
But at the same time, everyone's busy. Everyone, you know, we all kind of understand that that's the situation. And there are members of these other bands who also are in multiple projects and have issues, particularly Horse Torso. Those guys are all super busy. So, you know, we do what we can.
Cool. So I guess that's just, sort of the mentality of the New York City musician, is just to like take on a bunch of projects and see what survives and what flourishes.
Yeah. And I think it probably has a lot to do just with my, you know, roots as a, you know, music student and wanting to be a freelance musician. I think, you know, a lot of people, they start their project and that's their project. They write music for that. Mm-hmm. That's the thing they do. And they might develop their musicianship and become, you know, amazing at playing their instrument and everything. But, you know, they'll be tied to this one project and they won't necessarily feel the need to do more than that. And for me, you know, I still consider myself a freelance musician. But when I find a project that I really want to be a part of, you know, I might break my rules that I otherwise set for other gigs, like how much I'm making on a particular gig or something like that, or if I can do an unpaid rehearsal or an unpaid this or that. You know, it's, I feel like I'm lucky to have projects that I have so much faith in that I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do whatever I can to make this succeed. Yeah, I feel very fortunate for that.
Great. So, you mentioned when you returned to St. Louis that it was kind of a dry spell for you musically speaking. What did you find was the main problem with the scene there?
Well, you know, I guess on one hand you could say it was a dry spell for lots of things at that time. I didn't necessarily want to leave New York, but I was completely broke. And I also found myself not taking advantage of the social scene. I felt like I was supposed to be going out all the time and just, you know, like almost forcing myself on people. And like, you get that sense from some people there where it's like, they just come off desperate, and I never wanted to come off that way. Yeah. So I think I might've sacrificed some of the socializing that I should have been doing because I was self-conscious about being that guy who's always handing out his whatever.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about St. Louis. There's great musicians from St. Louis, amazing musicians from St. Louis. But, you know, it is definitely a struggling area in many ways. And a lot of venues that I used to play in high school are closing. And I mean, some things are opening back up or new spots are opening, but you know, it just, I mean, if nothing else, you know, let's say you have a gig and the bass player you love is busy that night. Well, you got maybe one or two more choices and they're, you know, you might not even be so fond of those choices, but that's it. You know, I actually had an experience that was when I was, my wife and I at the time were dating, but long distance. She was still in New York and she came to St. Louis for a summer and we were trying to play a show of her original music, not terribly hard music, but you know, I mean, you'd be reading charts, you have some sort of jazz chords and things. And, you know, yeah, we had a really rough time just assembling a band because the dude we wanted was busy, you know?
That's interesting. I lived in Kansas City for a year, and I was always jealous of St. Louis's music scene because touring musicians would come through and they would play St. Louis, and then they would play Lawrence, Kansas, and totally just skip over, you know, like one of the biggest cities in the state, because it would just made more sense to play, you know, you're coming from one side, you play St. Louis on your way in, and then you play Lawrence because that's where the college is and that's where the like music scene was. So I felt like I was in a really dry area, but every time I visited St. Louis, I felt like, oh man, like so much is happening here. Like, why can't this happen in Kansas City?
It's kind of interesting that you say that because, you know, and St. Louis people are going to kill me if they hear this. And I mean, that's going to happen at least to some extent when I talk about St. Louis, but the two have kind of flipped in that regard, maybe not for all shows, but
like
certainly,
recently?
Yeah, for the jazz scene, because I mean, my theory of the whole thing is that St. Louis and Kansas City have similar backgrounds with jazz. Obviously in the 40s and 50s, both of those cities were hotbeds of, I mean, you know, at the time, groundbreaking new style of music. And Kansas City really made that a narrative and a theme of the city. Yeah. You go to restaurants, there's a jazz theme, or there's, you know, the jazz
museum.
There's a
museum. Whole jazz district, you know.
Exactly. You know, they really hammered that home. And I feel like because of that, when people go out, they expect to maybe hear live music.
Yeah, barbecue and jazz is really like what Kansas City is holding on to. And
totally.
In all fairness, those two things are really, you know, killing it in Kansas City. As far as the reputation goes, it lives up to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have a handful of friends who have moved from St. Louis to Kansas City because they had more gigs there. It's a little safer in a lot of areas. And yeah, it's just easier for them to do what they're doing and make a living. And that's not to say that that's not also going on in St. Louis, but I've just seen younger musicians making that move. And yeah, I guess that's, you know, it was really just sort of a smart strategic thing on Kansas City's part.
Well, it'll be interesting to see when you're booking your next cross-country tour, what city you choose to play as you're moving through the Midwest.
Hopefully both.
Do the bookend of Missouri.
Potentially. I mean, I'm definitely going to play St. Louis because I just have a lot of friends there. I know some great bands. I mean, now that I'm not so tied to the jazz thing too, you know, I mean, there's just so many bands based there that I really like. And yeah, we're going to get over there at some point.
So is you said you've kind of freed yourself from the shackles of pure jazz, and my information in front of me says you were an experimental rock drummer, and I know you've brought some music. I'm hoping that maybe we could hear a couple tunes if you would like to play them.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, experimental rock drummer, I guess, you know, it's hard to know what to call yourself, but in the context of Horse Torso, the project that I write music for, that's, you know, I would call it math rock, but it's also got elements of jazz and elements of noise rock and all sorts of things. And it's hopefully what it is a sandwich of all the most delicious genres.
Sure.
At least in my opinion.
Well, I mean, any music that is truly revolutionary should define its own genre. And I believe maybe we will be hearing something completely fresh here in a second. So
Hopefully, yes.
All right. So what do you got for us? What's lined up?
All right. So this is the first track from the brand new Horse Torso album, Wolf Who Cried Boy. This track is called Actual Stablemates, which is basically a play off of the jazz standard Stablemates. And that's my sort of obnoxious horse metaphor, if you will.
Well, not obnoxious. It's clever.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear it. Wow. What was that track called again?
Actual Stablemates.
Right. And is so your record just came out or it's about to come out?
It came out October 12th. It's only available digitally and for streaming. Now it's on Spotify and iTunes and Amazon as well as Bandcamp, but initially it was exclusively on Bandcamp.
Cool. So you got all the major digital boxes checked there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of essential. You know, I mean, it's the best tool that underfunded or non-funded bands really have, because, you know, it used to be to get any distribution you needed a label.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it's a level playing field for now. And yeah, I mean, I would say that most bands would almost be crazy not to try and get as much digital distribution as they can.
Well, as someone who owns a label and sees kind of the breakdown of it, I can definitely say that projects in which physical products are released in tandem with digital streaming options, you see a huge slump in sales of physical format music. So I don't know if you're trying to, like, looking towards putting a physical release out, but that's something to keep in mind for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to print this album on vinyl. That is terribly expensive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of labels don't even offer that anyway.
Yeah, unless you're like a established or like real buzzy type of person, it's hard to get a label to spring for. I mean, it's, you're looking at thousands of dollars just for the product, and then there's other costs that go in, you know, promotion and shipping, distribution, etc. So
absolutely. I actually just sold a t-shirt to someone in Finland.
Yeah, how'd you like those shipping costs?
Yeah, well, and I realized it all at once because I got the order from Bandcamp and I'm like, okay, $15. Yeah, that's right, that's the shirt cost. So And then I'm like, where's the rest? Oh, that's right, I didn't even deal with that. So yeah, I wrote the guy like, hey, I'm going to go figure this out. Like, hopefully you're cool with it. And then I come back like, it's $13. So, you know, I just lowered the shirt cost a little because I would love to have someone in Finland wearing a Horse Torso shirt. So, yeah, but, you know, it's things like that are where it can get tricky when there's just one person doing everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Trust me. I know.
Yeah. For sure.
Cool. Horse Torso, your latest release was self-released, digitally only, but it's out there. As much as you can own a digital file, it can be owned.
Yeah, you know, you can purchase it as an MP3 or some other type of file you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And carry it around with you.
Cool. But that is just one of four or five bands that you're currently participating in.
Indeed.
Do you have something we could hear? You told me the next great American novelist just put out a record or is about to? Or
Yeah, so we finished the record. I mean, it's the lead singer, Sean Cahill, and the guitarist, Jason Cummings, have been in the studio, I think, every day, just tweaking things and adding layers. So, I mean, I did my part in March, and they've just been doing surgery on it this whole time. So we're planning on getting it out in April, hopefully. But this is a band that I ended up taking over for their old drummer. And I was a big fan of them before.
Was this the band you said you were the second drummer in?
Actually I was the second drummer in two of these bands.
Okay. Does that mean you were like, they have two drummers on stage playing simultaneously?
No, this was just me taking over for their first drummer.
Okay, cool.
He was just doing lots of different projects, and I mean, I don't even really know exactly why he left the band, but I had, in the case of both these other bands that I'm going to talk about, I had subbed for the drummer initially a few times, and I knew the material and whatever. And then when they, for different reasons, needed a new drummer, it was like, great, I already know most of your music, and we already have played together and built up a little bit of a chemistry. So I was psyched to take over for both of them, because I was like, oh, I'd love to be the drummer in that band.
So does, now that you are the de facto, you know, quote unquote main drummer, is there a second drummer that's behind you now waiting to like move into your hermit shell or hermit crab shell?
I guess I'm going to find that out as soon as there's a gig that I can't make. there was almost an instance like that recently where I was like, hey, is this gig like actually important? 'Cause I really can't make that date. And, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I want to earn my place in these bands. So if I subbed out a gig and some guy just nailed it and just played the most tasty musical ideas possible, then, you know, great, great job. And you're helping the world of art and music. So cool.
Well, that's very selfless of you. It's got to make you sweat a little bit though, I guess.
Absolutely. there's lots and lots and lots of talent out there. And that's something that when I was 18 and just arrived from St. Louis, I did not realize. I thought I was super, super cool. And then I immediately realized I was not that cool.
You seem like a cool guy to me.
I'm all right.
Well, I know that you are transitioning from your do or die musical life in the city, but up here drummers are kind of a hot commodity. So, you know, if someone sneaks in and usurps your position as a first drummer, maybe there are a lot of musicians who would love to have you up here.
Absolutely, guys and girls. I'm available. And I am definitely looking to play in more projects, especially in the Hudson River Valley area. So yeah, find me and talk to me and stuff.
For sure. And where can you be found on this great big worldwide web?
So there is DannyShare.com.
That's S-H-E-R.
S-H-E-R, exactly. Okay. And that's kind of just my freelance site. I just have different samples of me playing and things like that. And then Horse Torso has horsetorso.com and also has horsetorso.bandcamp.com. Yeah. And then I also have a drum lesson website, which I can't even remember it right now offhand, so I'm going to look it up when we're playing a song.
If they just search Danny Scher drum lessons, maybe.
Yeah, well, and I also have the Facebook page, Catskills Drum Lessons.
Oh, okay.
So you can definitely find me there. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I would love to hear another track if you have something queued up for us.
Absolutely. So this song is from the band The Next Great American Novelist. And we actually just released a music video for this song. We had another song that was featured on The Walking Dead.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And it was one of Sean's older tracks. I'm not on it.
So no royalties?
No royalties there.
They'll get you next time.
Yeah. I'm crossing my fingers loosely. Yeah, but so this track will be on our upcoming album that'll be titled Careless Moon.
And when does that come out?
Hopefully April.
Okay,
we're not completely sure, but we are still at the tweaking stage, and you know, it should be ready soon.
Great. Well, lucky listeners here at WGXC, you're about to get a advanced screening of this wonderful track. So let's hear it.
Thank you.
The next great American novelist. You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah, and just to put it out there, the website for Next Great American Novelist is just tngan.com.
T-J-A-N.
T-N-G-A-N, as in the Next Great American Novelist.com.
All right, guys. Hope you wrote it down.
I had to.
Yeah. Great. Well, that was definitely a way different sound from Horse Torso. So it seems like you have an arsenal of drum tricks up your sleeve, huh?
I just love lots of different types of music, and I'm thankful to play an instrument that is applicable to these different types of music. Mm-hmm. You know, I also love trumpet, but I feel bad for trumpet players who might one day start listening to math rock and then they won't have anything to do about it.
Oh, come on. You don't think a good trumpet player could find a place to fit into math rock?
Yeah, you're right. That's actually a horrible example.
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. Maybe you poked a hole in that whole theory, but I mean, certainly I love that about drums. Just the fact that if I am inspired by any kind of music, I can pretty much figure out what my duty would be or what I can add to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really enjoy trying to navigate that, especially with, you know, the genres that I already love. I mean, indie rock and things like that, you know, it's that second nature for me. That's pretty much what taught me how to play. So, I feel like it's really the best of both worlds for me to be able to have bands like Next Great American Novelist and Regret the Hour in addition to Horse Torso.
Sure. Well, it seems to me, and you know, I'm not a musician by any means, but it seems as far as drums go, like jazz drumming is maybe the hardest and most complicated of all the drum schools out there. So
yeah, in some ways, I think I do really find there to be a component of everything but jazz that's actually almost more difficult than jazz. There's
in what respect?
There's a floaty quality to the grooves that a lot of jazz drummers play. This is another thing that people are going to get all over me for. I've actually had debates about this, but
I'm not going to debate you. You can say whatever you want.
I mean, I just, you know, I've always felt like a rock drummer. Even when I played jazz, I felt like I was coming at it from a rock perspective. I was kind of like hitting too hard and like, you know, being a little too literal with a lot of stuff I would play. But I know a lot of jazz drummers who are really creative and sound great playing that type of music. And then if you told them, okay, here's an exact beat, you have to stick to it and you have to keep the tempo perfectly solid, it would be like the hardest thing they ever did. And I think that might just have something to do with starting with jazz and ending with jazz. I didn't get into jazz until I'd say maybe eighth grade or high school. And at that point I had been listening to and practicing all these other types of music. And I usually felt like I really had a grasp on the concepts involved in those different genres. And then when I heard John Coltrane Giant Steps, I was like, what is this? What is this drummer doing? It makes no sense. I can't do it. I don't get it. Why? And that was kind of why I stopped there and got deeper into it, was because I was like, this is the one thing I don't understand. So if I'm going to be serious, I need to wrap my head around this.
Very interesting. See, I think a lot of people might have heard that and gone the other way, like, oh, I'm staying away, I don't get it, I'm staying away from this, I don't want to.
A lot of times
that.
I wish I had done that. I feel like jazz for me is just a body of knowledge that I'm glad I obtained, but it was never, maybe at for a brief period it was where my heart was, but you know, I feel like I arrived at it for technical reasons, and then when I was getting back to just what got me into music in the first place, I was going, you know, back to the other side of things and less. I mean, I still love technical music, as you can probably, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Hear,
it comes through. It does. It adds a very unique characteristic to the music, and I think it's probably really good that you started with such a like disciplined foundation in drumming and challenging yourself like that.
Yeah, I mean, I a lot of times I feel like it gets in the way of me enjoying what I'm doing, but I think that you kind of have to be a little bit OCD about your understanding of an art form to be really deep in it. And that might, you know, make you anxious, and that might, I mean, how many times have I felt horrible about a performance and then, not that it was necessarily great, but you know, people didn't perceive it the way I did. I just did one or two things I didn't like, and it just, you know, set me off.
Well, as an artist, I think you're going to find throughout your career, no matter how much you practice, no matter how technically fluent you get, like, you're always going to be your harshest critic.
Absolutely.
And that kind of comes with creating art as a whole, like whether you're a writer or a visual artist, a videographer or a musician, like if you're not you know, constantly pushing yourself to be better, then it's like you've given up. So
absolutely. And yeah, you know, I think when you love an art form, you're listening to things that other people are doing, and you're inspired, and you think, you know, that's not something I could have come up with. That's not something that I, you know, can naturally do. And it makes you want to do it. And the two things might not be, you know, one might not be superior to the other. But I think most musicians and a lot of comedians and lots of different types of artists who are brilliant at what they do, they still look at other artists that have a different skill set and they're in awe. I mean, I wish I could write a rock song ever, you know, like every song I write has to have 1,000 different meters and, you know, be dissonant and have all this weird stuff going on. It's like, man, if I could write a song like Regret the Hour or Next Great American Novelist or like My Wife, I would love to, maybe one day I'll figure out how to do that.
Hey, you're young still. You've got plenty of time to figure that out. I mean, just keep with it, and I don't know, like if you're having trouble creating something that already exists. I don't think that's really a problem. I think the fact that you're creating what you're creating, and it's something without a real parallel, that speaks volumes, you know?
Thanks. Yeah. That's pretty much all I'm trying to do. And I think what's great is that, you know, it's not just a goal, but it's what makes me happy. So one way or another, I guess, even if I don't reach that goal in my mind ever, the process is very enjoyable.
Sure. Well, just as much as we need to challenge ourselves as artists to grow, it is also important to listen to the people who are consuming your art when they tell you that you're doing a great job. And, well, as the person who's sitting across from you right now, I must say you're doing great. So continue to improve, but also acknowledge that you're doing a really good job.
Thanks so much. It really does mean a lot.
I'd love to hear some more. Do you have anything from another project, maybe?
Or? Yeah. Can I squeeze two more in?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Yeah. Cool. So, the next track is from a band called Regret the Hour. There are two brothers involved in this project, Nate and Ben McCarthy. And they both play guitar, and they have an amazing chemistry between the two of them. All the guitar effects and things like that are really fine-tuned and well thought out, and it's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's a vibe. And then Tim Emmerich plays bass. I'm in a number of projects with him. He's someone that lived in the same building as my wife and I in Brooklyn, and then shortly after that we started playing in a bunch of projects together. And their drummer moved to Nashville recently, and I had subbed for him a few times. So yeah, when they asked me to join the band, I was definitely psyched.
Wonderful. Great. Well, we have about 10 minutes left, so let's hear what you got.
All right. This song is called Walls. I forget the name of the album, but I'll say it after I play the song.
All right. Fair enough.
Says this is no lie, it's not what it seems. And everyone says if you got, you won't really be free. So I tried to write it down, try to figure it out. But every time I do, the words just can't be found. And everyone knows if you go, you take a part of me. Where do it turn when the walls come down? All that you see, it's really gone off the rails. It's all a mystery. We'll be right back. Yeah, we keep loving on till we find a way out. And I'd sail away if I could turn you
was another quite different sound there.
Yeah, that was a band that I used to go see all the time and had various friends that played with them and always really loved their tunes. I think the first time I subbed for that drummer, which was, I think, the end of 2015, that was when I really sort of took a second listen to a lot of those songs because I was learning them and I was really listening more, you know, in depth. And that was when I really realized like just how amazing their songwriting is and the sound that they have. And just, yeah, I mean, they, and also they are so young. I think they are, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think Nate is like 22 and his brother is like 24.
Yeah.
And then Tim and I are in our mid 30s, you know?
Right. Yeah. Last week, we had, Lorcan O'Reilly, who's a local musician in here, and he played like some of the most like stunning tunes. And then he dropped it on us that he was 23, and it's like, holy crap, what have I done with my life?
You know? I mean, I have this theory that like learning your instrument on YouTube is a big reason why there's like a 1,000,000,000 more musicians now, because I mean, and it might just be an excuse for the fact that I wasn't as good at their age, but I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, someone in a rural part of America who doesn't have access to teachers. And now they can access all the music there is and they can access lessons online. And
maybe I should start watching YouTube tutorials then.
I have been, you know, I mean, I watch them for everything. Yeah, they've been helping me practice and just, yeah, I love it.
Cool. Well, you have one more for us. We have about 4 minutes left, so let's see if we can sneak it in.
Yeah. So this is Mel Flannery Trucking Company. Mel Flannery is my wife. She went to Manhattan School of Music. I met her through mutual musician friends. And yeah, she is an amazing singer. She's also in a band called Jesus on the Main Line that's on Ropadope Records.
Cool.
And this track was self-released in 2013. And it's actually the same bassist from Horse Torso, Nick Jost, who's also in the band Baroness. That's a whole nother conversation. And then a friend of ours, Jeremy Viner, on keys.
Wonderful. Well, we'll have to get Mel in here in the studio sometime. But I'd love to hear this track. In the chance that we don't hear from each other, if the show ends before the end of the song, I would just like to thank y'all for listening to WGXE's Tuesday afternoon show. And if you want to hear more of my raspy, flu ridden voice, tune in Friday at 11 AM for my show City Folk. And without further ado, our final song of the afternoon.
Oh, I just wanted to say the song is called Not Without You / Me, and it's from the Auto Heart EP.
All right.
No